I'll just begin. Well, you might think you've gone to the wrong film, but this is the right film. It's just another director. That's known as Valentine Ferenczi, but he's there. I'm Christian Rosendale, so. But anyway, it's a joint work, so I'm just going to present the same results. Okay, so as we've done a lot of descriptive set theory last week, I think, but not any Banach-based theory, I think I'll start out with a few definitions just to get us all at the same level. So we're only working with separable Banach spaces because these are the ones that are Polish, and so I mean, if you want to do descriptive set theory on them, they have to be separable. So if you have some Banach space X, and you have it, that's okay, so separable. And you have some sequence in it. So let's call it. And you say that this is a basis for X, if and only if. For any element of the space, we can find a unique norm-convergent sum of this that makes it, there exists a unique infinite linear combination. So this is a norm-convergent series that's equal to it. So this is, well, these vectors are surely linearly independent, but this is not enough because, in fact, any null basis for a separable Banach space of infinite dimension has to be of, I think it's power 2 to the omega. So this is a completely different notion. So when you look at this, you can associate with the basis a sequence of functionals. So if you define EI star, this is simply the functional that takes some sum I should use another letter here, EN to AN. So this is continuous. When this is a basis. So also the projections onto the first n coordinates, which will just be a linear combination of the above functionals. It's also continuous. In fact, this is, if you have some sequence that fulfills the demand that this is continuous, and in fact they will be uniformly bounded, these projections, then it is a basis. So it suffices. This is an equivalent way of saying it. So, for example, if you take the LP, then you have the usual basis for LP, and you see that this is some sum. Infinite sum is an LP if and only if the sum of the of these to the P converges. So this is, it's summable. So in fact, this is a basis for the Banach space LP. So this is the example we want to generalize, or this is the example that has been generalized by the notion of a basis. But we can have a basis that's a bit better. If you want to make, you can ask that any time you have a sum like that that gives an element of the space, you want this series to converge unconditionally. So any permutation of this series will give the same element, will will sum up to the same element. So Pi is if for all x that's equal to some, right? So in that case, in fact, there are many ways of stating this property, this nice property of a basis. One will see that any time, so if you have an unconditional basis and any time you have a subset of omega, the projection PA of that's defined as follows. The projection onto the A set of the basis, this is so this is continuous, bounded. So this is another way of stating it. And one can see that since this is a projection, the subspace, so and this is continuous. So the subspace spans, so this is the closed linear span of the vectors with in the index in A. This is a complemented subspace of the space. Simply because there's a projection onto it. So suppose you have two different Banach spaces, and well, this is really a notion that, well, it says that it's a basic sequence. That is, that it's a basis for some space. And furthermore, in this case, the space is equal to X. But you can also say that simply that EI is a basic sequence if it's the basis for its closed linear span. So, I mean, a space can contain a basic sequence without necessarily having a basis itself. So if you have two basic sequences, EI and FI, maybe in two different spaces, you can ask whether they are equivalent. So you say they are. If the operator that sends EI to FI, so this extends to an isomorphism. This is just, I mean, if you define it linearly, it will become a linear operator on it, on a dense subspace, and if it in fact extends to an isomorphism, we say that the sequences are equivalent. This is the same as saying that every time you have a non-convergent sequence for EI, if you take the same coordinates for the other sequence, you'll also get a non-converging sequence, and inversely. So the bases are more or less the same. So, so we have another notion of being subsymmetric. So we say that this is subsymmetric if, so for all subsets of omega, this sequence is EI omega is equivalent. So this is with EI A. So this is the increasing enumeration of the set, evidently. Because we can't change the order of the elements. Sorry? It's infinite, otherwise, I mean, it's no meaning. So, there's a classical result of Masur that says that any Banach space contains basic sequence. This is really a classical result. Notice that this does not say that there's a basis for the space. This is false. It contains a basic sequence that's a basis for a subspace, but it's not necessarily a basis for the space. In fact, already in some LPs you can find spaces without basis. So the so there was a big open question whether you can replace this with an unconditional basic sequence. And this turned out to be false. This is due to Murray and Gowers that solved this problem in the beginning of the 90s. So this is this is not at all trivial. This is a very deep result from Banach space theory. One can in fact, what they showed is the following. They showed that there isn't. There is an HI space, which means, so let's say that X is HI, which means hereditarily. And decomposable. So, if every time you take an infinite dimensional subspace of X, so this is closed. And you can't decompose Y as the direct sum of closed infinite dimensional subspaces. So, and for all sets V in Y, also infinite dimensional closed subspaces, Y is not equal to the direct sum of the two. And if you see the property here, suppose that you had some unconditional basis in an HI space, then because these projections of the spaces spanned by the infinite subsets here, they are complemented. You can just decompose omega into two disjoint, or partition omega into two infinite sets, and then you would have a direct sum. Suppose, so if this had, in fact, I A plus I complement of A, this is simply EI omega, in case the basis is unconditional. So there can't be any unconditional basis. And in fact, afterwards, Gauss showed that the following result, by using Ramsey methods, that any Banach space X contains either an unconditional basic sequence, or an HI subspace. And this is, of course, true for non-separable spaces, too. You just go to a separable subspace. Okay. And afterwards, using a lot of different theorems that were found in the beginning of the 90s, he was able to show that L2 is the only homogeneous space. So what does that mean? This is the only space, the only separable Banach space that's isomorphic to all of its subspaces. L2 does not contain any, because, I mean, you take an orthogonal basis to L2, and then every time you have a complement, a subspace, you just take an orthogonal basis, and the fact that L2, I think it's even isometric. You can make it isometric to any of its subspaces. Well, so there's a natural question, which was posed to us by Gilles Godefroy, which is, suppose that you're not L2. So, well, then you have at least two, well, you have a subspace that's not non-isomorphic to you. But do you have more than two? How many do you have? And well, so we have some results concerning this. We haven't been able to solve the problem, but we have something in that direction. Well, first of all, it's quite easy to see that you can you have to have another property of HI spaces. It is that it's not isomorphic to any of its subspaces. This But so, as we can always go to, in this sort of problem, you can, if you want to count the number of non-isomorphic subspaces of a space, or you want to have some general theorem that says either there's a lot or there are very few, then you can always go to subspaces. I mean, if going to a subspace only diminishes the number of non-isomorphic subspaces, but you could, in the beginning, suppose that you are already working on that subspace. This is a bit vague, but this means that the question is not, the question is really invariant under going to subspaces in a sense. So if you start out with any Banach space and you want to answer this question, then you can, well, you can either suppose that it has an unconditional basis by simply going to the subspace spanned by the basis, or you can suppose that it's an HI space. So what happens if you have an HI space? This is, in effect, rather trivial because, well, an HI space does not have an unconditional basis, but there must be some subspace of it that has a conditional basis. And this subspace will also be HI. So you take some basis for, well, some HI subspace. And then you, well, now you want to construct a lot of non-isomorphic subspaces. So how do you do this? Well, you say that, well, if you have a real, then this real is, well, we say that this is really just the set of rational numbers smaller than it. This can do whatever. But Q is the same as N. This is more or less, you take some bijection with N, so you can really just in a sense replace this by N. Can do it properly if you wish. So you take some bijection of N with Q. So now we say that R goes to the set AR, which is a set of N such that sigma of N is less than R. So you see that this, so you get now that R is strictly less than S implies that AR is strictly contained in AS. And therefore you get, if you look at the subspaces spanned here, you get a strict inclusion. So you see that one can easily construct a continuum of linearly ordered under inclusion non-isomorphic subspaces by simply enumerating them by reals. So an HI space has a continuum of non-isomorphic subspaces. So the case that really interests us is the one that's here, the one that says that that it has an unconditional basis. So this is a simple observation. Okay, but now I'll get back to this problem and start out with something a bit different, which is that that the other notions of that isomorphism that are really interesting. This is the notion of equivalence of bases, for example. So if you take some I should write it down properly. If you so suppose that BI is a basic sequence, and so then all of its subsequences are in fact equivalent. I call subsymmetric. So this is one case. So either the basis is very simple from the point of view of equivalence, or in fact, E0 Borel reduces to the notion of equivalence. This, I wrote it, this is the notion of equivalence on the subsequences of this basis. So this is restricted to subsequences. So either the basis is very simple, or it's in some way rather complex. And you can't do There are cases of. Yeah, no, that should not be complete. I think there are cases of spaces that have exactly complexity E zero. I should not say it too loudly, but. So how does one go about to show this? And this is, again, not too difficult. So, well, let's suppose that it has at least two non-equivalent subsequences. Let's suppose that let's call them xn and yn. This is just to avoid the renumbering or indexing. Let's just call them like that. So if you look at the notion of equivalence, it means that the operator, the identity operator more or less, the one that sends xn to yn, is an isomorphism. So this is not the case here. So what does it mean that it's not an isomorphism? It means that, well, in one way it's on small pieces it gets it's not k isomorphic, and then after that it's not k plus 1 isomorphic, etc. So we can start out. We can choose a small piece like this. That's not so this these two sequences are not two equivalent. And after that, well, you can get it a bit worse further on. You want to choose xn1, xm1, yn1, ym1, such that this vector is in fact an element of the sequence that comes after this vector and this vector. So you want that then, in our case, this is, if you write it like this, the support of xn and the support of yn0 is less than the support of the corresponding xn1 and so you can choose these so that they're not three equivalent. And you continue in the same way, always making sure that the support comes, that you choose them far enough in the sequence. And then if you have a binary sequence alpha, so this is an element of the Cantor space, well, if you want to associate the subsequence of the basis with it. So how do you do? Well, if it's one, then you on the first coordinate you choose this one, otherwise you choose that one. If it's one on the second coordinate you choose this one, otherwise you choose that one. And you just take the union of these, and it's easy to see that if two sequences differ in infinitely many places, then they will be different. They will have different subsets of the sequence like this in infinitely many places, and this forces the operator to be unbounded in one of the directions. And otherwise, they will be eventually identical, the sequences, and then you will get that they are equivalent, in fact. This is a shocker for them. Okay, but this, well, this in fact this was a short proof, because you have in the you have a result of Poisson that says that E0 rho reduces to isomorphism between separable Banach spaces. This was the first result that was known about this. And in fact, we can get this very easily, because there's a space called the Torelson space, where, in fact, if you look at the spaces spanned by subsequences of the bases, two such spaces are isomorphic if and only if the bases are equivalent. So here, and you furthermore have to know that there are at least two classes. And this is quite trivial to see for the Torelson space. So you get this result easily from this dichotomy. Okay. What I want to show here, to begin with, is that you have an unconditional basis, then either there is a perfect set of non-isomorphic subspaces spanned by the subsequence. So either there is we can take it then to be the infinite subsets of omega. Such that for all A and B different in P, the spaces spanned by the subsequences are non-isomorphic. Or, which is a property that's quite useful in Banach space theory, that you get that all for all A subsets of infinite subsets of omega isomorphic to its square, and its hyperplanes and much more. This is in EIA is when you add a a subset and take the sum with this space, then you just fall back onto the same space. And in fact, for A, there is a sequence of infinite subsets of A. Such that all of these spaces spanned are isomorphic, and, well, in fact, you can get some constant here. Yeah? You can get them to be uniformly isomorphic to the space. So. And you can decompose A to be an infinite direct sum of these spaces. So this is, the sum is given by the norm on the basis. I mean, you put them together in the way that they're put together in the space, in fact. So you, I mean, when you take infinite sums, you have to give a way of putting them together, and this is just this one. So, well, I have to say that this was, this theorem resembles another theorem by Kalten, Nigel Kalten, which says that he, If you have a countable number of classes, then you can get this more or less, except that you can't pull out a constant from his proof. So this is, in a certain sense, eliminating omega 1. I mean, this is, isomorphism is an analytic equivalence relation between on the space of separable Banach spaces. So either it has a less than omega 1 classes are a perfect set of classes. So this says that if you don't have a perfect set, then you already get it. And it gives us a much, it gives some other things of the, a bit the same sort. So, how does one want to prove such a thing? No, this is, in fact, it turns out to be simple descriptive set theory and simple algebraic manipulations of infinite dimensional subspaces. So let's start. Yeah, okay. So either there is a perfect set of infinite subsets of omega, such that every time you take that gives a, there's a perfect set of classes. This is another way to state it. Or any time you take a subset, an infinite subset of omega, and you look at the space spanned by the subsequence given by it, this space is isomorphic to its square. This is the first property. Or every time you take an infinite subset of omega and a, some subset of it, so this could be a singleton, for example, then the direct sum of the A, the space given by A and D, is isomorphic to A. So this, if you take D a singleton, you get this is just a, this is just a space where this space is of codimension 1. So this says that A, the space given by A, is isomorphic to its hyperplanes. Because if it's isomorphic to one hyperplane, then it's isomorphic to all of them. So this is
for all of A,
yeah, all, yeah. Yeah. Okay, well, I just wanted to state this, because this property seems a bit strange, except for the hyperplanes. You want to know that a space is isomorphic to its hyperplanes and its square, but the other property is somewhat. Yeah, and here, this just says that you... I can't pull it up enough. Too late. Well, if you could see, it says that you can really put, well, if instead of writing this subspace spanned by A, I just write A and look at this as the Banach space spanned by the subsequence. It says that it's isomorphic to an infinite direct sum of subspaces that are uniformly isomorphic to it. This was the last property. So maybe. Anyway, I'll skip this notation now. This is to be precise. Now I'll be imprecise, and then you can see what's going on, in fact. Because, well, if you look at 2 to the omega, then you can define the function that sends this to, so let's call it the subspaces of this space. Well, this, you can do all this in the Efros-Borel space of separable Banach spaces, but I won't get into that. This is a Polish space, in fact. Or you can make it Polish. It's a standard Borel space. And on this standard Borel space, so let's call this space for big B. So on B, we have thing is that if you look at the space of Banach spaces, or the subspaces of this space, the relation of isomorphism between subspaces is sigma 1-1. And, well, what is the function here? F of A, then, is simply the space spanned by the subsequence. This is a Borel function. And this is so we're not going to really look at. We can avoid this notation simply by looking at the induced relation on 2 to the omega. So F minus 1 is 1 of this is sigma 1-1 and is denoted by, I call it the same. This is, so now we have the relation of isomorphism is really on the 2 to the omega. But, if you want to show that there's a lot of classes for this relation, then you have to do the Kuratowski-Michelski result. You say, okay, is either. This relation is meager. And in that case, theorem. Then we immediately get a perfect set of classes. Or it's non-meager, and in that case, as the equivalence relation is they're measurable, there's a non-meager class. Then you want to really do the 0-1 law, except that you can't really do the 0-1 law here. You have to be a bit more careful and do what it has to take. Because until now you can't suppose that this relation is invariant under finite changes of a subset of omega. But you have something that resembles it. So suppose that A is a residual in some NS, I mean the sequence is beginning with S, and meager in MT. Well, I can prolong S to some S prime and T to T prime such that, well, first of all, they have the same length. And if we define the cardinality of S prime to be simply the number of n less than the length of n prime, such that S prime of n is equal to 1, then this is equal to the cardinality of T prime. This is easily done. And then between, so define a phi that goes from n S prime to n T prime, which is a homeomorphism. They're simply sending S prime alpha to T prime alpha. This is a homeomorphism. And, well, now in fact, phi preserves the isomorphism class because you are changing. You really see that, well, this is the indicator function of some infinite subset A, and this is the indicator function of some subset B, and you see that from a certain point on they're the same set, and in the beginning, if from before that point, they have the same cardinality. So this is, you're really just using the fact that subspaces of the same finite codimension in the Banach space are isomorphic. So phi of A is included in A, and we get a contradiction, as this is a homeomorphism. So A is in fact residual, and we can't see space. Well, you know how residual sets, what they look like. You can take subsets of this sort. This such that A0 and A1 partition omega and that these are really tests for being in the residual set, so for all D subset of omega is D A I equal to A zero is equal to B zero, or D A one is equal to B one, then D is in our class. Furthermore, well, the notion of complement is a homeomorphism. So it must send some set in A to another set in A. There is a point that stays in the class. So there is a subset of omega such that C and the complement of C are also in A. Well, from now on, it's simple calculation. So we have that omega. This is the same as C union the complement of C. These two sets are disjoint. So the space is spanned by the subsequences, form a direct sum in the complete space, in this space. So this is really just C plus the complement of C, abusing notation, because. But well, if you look at it, both B0 B1 and B0 union B1 will all be in this the residual set. So I can just replace these by copies of B0 because they are all in the residual set. And this is again B0 direct sum with B1. I can replace this by B1. Okay, now I have two disjoint sets. They form the direct sum is really their union. So this is B0 union B1. But this set again is in the residual set. So this is just B0. What do you see here? Well, you see that there's one set, there's one space in the residual set that's isomorphic to its square. But again, this is isomorphic to omega. So in fact, the whole space is isomorphic to its square. Well, of course, this the hypothesis is that there's not a perfect set of classes. So this is really the same every time you do this argument on 2 to A for some infinite set A. If there's a perfect set of classes for this, then there's certainly a perfect set of classes on 2 to the omega. So you can really suppose, so this argument was completely general. You can suppose this is true for any infinite subset of omega. So this is really for all A infinite subset of omega. You have that the A is isomorphic to the square of it. Well, if I want to have this, then I just start calculating. So A, the direct sum with D. You suppose that D is some subset of A and that A is infinite. Well, this is really just A minus D plus D plus D. Because A and this is just a partition of A, and so they form a direct sum. Well, now this, I mean, I can just use this hypothesis on D for, well, at least as long as D is infinite. So this is, you suppose that D is infinite, otherwise I have to do it in some other way. So this is really just A minus D plus D, and this is again A. Okay, so this settles the case of D being infinite. If I want to show that it's isomorphic, so now I only have the problem with finite D. Well, how do you do that? You notice that this operation is a homeomorphism of Cantor space. And you take the symmetric difference with some singleton. This is a simple homeomorphism of the Cantor space. You change one coordinate to the opposite. So this So there is some A in A, and we can suppose that A does zero is not contained in one in A, such that so union in A is also contained in A. Well, this really just says that this A is isomorphic to its hyperplane, or this space is isomorphic to its hyperplane, which is A. So this is true. This is an isomorphic property, so it's true in general. So so it's isomorphic to a Zipf plane, and then simply by induction you get it for all finite d. So true all d. Okay. Now I don't want to show this infinite dimensional version, but here to get the infinite number of sets, you really just take an infinite partition of omega and subsets B0, B1, etc. And you look at it and you get the result. To get the constant, you have to be a bit more careful. Well, in fact, you have to be much more careful on this step. You have to really do a uniform version and see how much of the sequence you change. And then you can extract the constant from the proof. So this shows the result. So this really uses almost nothing about bonding spaces. So what can you get? Well, the natural thing is to look for what are the Ramsey type properties of this. Can you get a homogeneous set in case you don't have a perfect set? And well, I don't know if this has been written down anywhere, but I talked about it with Stevo, and we both came up with a proof of it. Anyway, it's rather natural to show. That is, if you have, so this is observation or theorem or whatever. If you have, suppose E is a sigma 1-1 equivalence relation on X Polish. It's on the Ramsey space, the set of infinite subsets of omega. So this is a Polish space. And you suppose that there's not a perfect set of classes. Well, then in fact you do have a Ramsey type theorem for it, but there's a certain limit to how good it can be, because when you get some sequence of infinite subsets of omega such that A0 contains all the other, and every time you take some infinite subset of A0, then in fact there is an n such that B is E equivalent with AN. So this is the optimal theorem you can get. You can't get better. So if you don't have an equivalence relation with this its importance, it's sigma 1-1. If you don't have a perfect set of classes, then you do really have a Ramsey-type theorem, but only with a... on the cube, there's a countable number of classes. So, well, in our case, we can do better, because, well, we can't just diagonalize as we wish, but there's still it's the notion of isomorphism, for example, is still somewhat invariant under finite changes, as we saw here. You try to adapt this proof there, and then you get the proposition that if no perfect classes of isomorphism classes on due to the omega, I mean with the same identification as before, then in fact, there is a homogeneous set. Then there is an A, an infinite subset of omega, such that for all further, and this is evidently important, that they have to be infinite. In fact, we have isomorphism. With the same identification. So it says that there is a Ramsey-type result here. This, there are of course other types of applications of this remark. This is if you, for example, if you look at well, you say that two basic sequences are permutatively equivalent if and only if there is some permutation of omega such that they are equivalent after this permutation. So you really just renumber them. Then again, because this is really a equivalence is really a sigma, and this is becomes analytic. So this is of course an analytic equivalence relation. If you look, so on the Ramsey space, given a sum basis, you look at the sub sequences given by the subset. Again, the same type of result holds there, but in fact you can get something better because there's a theorem, I have to state it properly, by Bourguin. Some other permutation, it's true. It says that suppose that it's unconditional. Now, and commutatively equivalent to any of its subspace, of any of its subsequences. And so this is ready about. So suppose any time you take a subsequence, you can permute it so as to become equivalent with the basis. Then, in fact, then there is a permutation of omega such that permute the basis, and then the basis really becomes subsymmetric. But since we are only interested in subsequences, you can just go to a subsequence where this permutation is increasing with the natural ordering of the numbers. So so this is the corollary of really of the above methods. And if the sum this and in fact you get a subsymmetric subsequence. Okay. Well, I just have a few minutes. Okay, now it's working. I mentioned this result of Poussin that showed that E0n reduces to isomorphism between separable Banach spaces. But in fact, you can get something stronger on the Torelson space, on subspaces of the Torelson space. There's a space called T. That's the closed linear span of some unconditional basis. So this is a special space class called the Torelson space. So under Torelson space, there are some very nice properties. For example, if you look at the subsequences, I mentioned this in the short proof of Broussard's result, and if you look at the subsequences of these spaces, then the space is spanned by the subsequences. Sequences are isomorphic if and only if the sequences are equivalent, in fact. And as this is unconditional, all of these spaces are complemented in the space. And in fact, they are all isomorphic to their squares. So, well, you can show that E1, Borel reduces to isomorphism on subspaces of G. Okay, so this, in fact, the reduction is to equivalence because of this result. So this is also true for the. This is really just subsequences. And there's a notion of Lipschitz homeomorphism, which is a purely metric notion, though it might be studied more in the by the Banach space theorists than other people. But it is that. So, in fact, if you look at such subspaces, and you suppose that they are Lipschitz homeomorphic, then so let me do it generally. So this is a rather deep theorem, not by me. And x, y are reflexive and separable. Then if x is Lipschitz homeomorphic to y, this is written like this, x plus z is isomorphic to y, and y plus v is isomorphic to x. So if they're Lipschitz homeomorphic, then in fact they are complemented in one and another. So furthermore, if they are isomorphic to their squares, then we have that Well, X is isomorphic to Y plus V. I'll have to do that. This is isomorphic to, well, I is isomorphic to itself, so I can replace this Y by two copies of the disjoint sum of, direct sum of two copies of Y. This is still isomorphic. But now this is just X again. So this is Y plus X. And of course this argument is symmetric, so I can do the same for Y. So you get then isomorphic. And all this is the case for the subsequences spanned by the subspaces spanned by subsequences of the Terralfian subspace. So in fact you also get that E1 Borel reduces to Lipschitz homeomorphism. And so this is between separable Banach spaces, but this is a completely metric notion. So it's, I mean, it generalizes for any Polish metric space. So it's a bit funny that you have to, by passing through Banach spaces, you obtain some result that you really don't know how to prove this for, if you just start out with try to construct Polish spaces instead. So you really have to go through Banach space theory to get this. Okay, I think.